Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Free Association. This is another, as a blast from the past this time. I found a 2 hour video of David Icke speaking in 1994. So almost 30 years ago, 12, 27 years ago. I saw him speak in 1998. At the Connaught Hall, which is in Red Lion Square in London, in just off the West End in London, and he blew me away completely. I didn't understand what he was talking about at the time, but there was a lot of challenging material in there. It has to be said. There's a lot of his shape-shifting reptilian overlord material in there. That was the first time he introduced that. I think he was promoting a book called The Biggest Secret, which is a very disturbing indeed book. And yeah, I was dragged to that one by a woman who was on a flower essence practitioner course that I was on at the time, a woman called Deborah. So she opened my eyes to things that I may not have otherwise seen. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you can't unsee them once you've seen them. That's the thing. Anyway, this is David Icke. I'm going to play the first 20 minutes of it and see how I feel about the material. It's early days for him, so I don't know what's actually in the video, but we'll play 20 minutes and see how it goes.
A great deal about what I felt was the spiritual revolution going on in the world, and I'll touch on that very much tonight. But I also want to talk about the manipulation that's going on in the world as well, a manipulation that wants to keep from us this spiritual knowledge and also wants to turn us into little more than robots that only think in ways that this manipulation wants us to think. I found it kind of an interesting analogy when you look at some of these contraptions you get in laboratories. You know when the scientists get a mouse and they put the mouse in a glass tube and it walks along the glass tube and every now and again it gets the option of going left or right down another tube. Now the mouse thinks it's free. It thinks it can make its own decisions on where it's really going. But the parameters set for it are very, very limited. So it is, as I'll talk about this evening, with the human race. We are persuaded that we are free, so we don't rebel. The fact is, we live in a subtle but very powerful global tyranny, which we can emerge from. But only A, if we know what's going on, and B, if we're willing to stand up and do something about it. That combination will bring it to an end. Anything but that combination will see it go further along the road to controlling our lives. This evening's going to be kind of many parts. I'm going to talk for, I don't know, an hour or so in the first half, and then we'll have a little break, and then I'll talk a bit about UFOs and stuff in the second half, and then we'll take some questions. But I want to first of all just touch on some of the things that I've kind of begun to appreciate because of what's happened to me about how easy people accept what they are fed as reality without saying, hold on a minute, what do I think about what I'm being told? So many things have been written and said about me in the last 3 to 4 years that are so far from the truth, it beggars belief. And yet all the time, even all these years on, I still walk down the street and some people laugh at me or laugh at me and my children. And I don't mind people doing that, but they're not laughing at me for what I am. They're laughing at this guy who looks a bit like me, has got the same name, apparently, that I keep reading about from time to time, but is about as far from me as it's possible to be. That's the person they're laughing at, the image projected out, not the real person, which they don't know. And face of this system, we are being encouraged, that's the mildest word I can use, to conform to certain ways of thinking. For instance, what are exams? Who sets the questions in exams? The status quo does. Who decides what the answers are going to be if we're going to pass those exams? The status quo does. And if we don't give the status quo what it wants to hear, we don't progress within it, which is a very powerful encouragement to give the status quo what it wants to hear and perpetuate the myths into the next generation. It's what's going on in the education system all the time. I remember talking to a physics student at Cambridge University once, and he said, I've heard more sense tonight about physics and the nature of life than I get from my lecturers, he said, but I can't say that in my exam because I'd fail. And another thing that kind of struck home to me when I spoke in America a couple of years ago is how we allow our world and our values and how we judge each other and how we judge others and what we feel guilty about or not guilty about to be decided not by what we think is right, but be decided often by what people sometimes thousands of years ago believed was right. Because we don't, A, ask the question why, which is the most liberating question is possible to ask, and B, have the courage and confidence to stand up and say, well, I don't think we should be doing this. I don't care how long we've done it. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to do it another way. Last time I was in Liverpool, I told the story, but for those who weren't there that night, it's worth repeating, of the lady in the audience when I spoke in Houston in Texas, who came up to me afterwards when I'd been talking about all this, and she said, I've got a story, she said, that sums up what you're saying. She said, when I was first married, she said, I used to cut the corners off the ham before I put it in the pan and put it in the oven, you know. She said, and one day my husband came up to me and said, why do you do that? She said, I don't know, my mother used to do it. What's it matter, you know? So he said, well, why did your mother cut the corners off the ham before she put it in the pan? She said, I don't know, my mother, she just did it. What's it matter? He said, call your mother and ask her why she cut the corners off the ham. So she calls her mother and she said, Mom, you know when I was a girl and you used to cut the corners off the ham, and why did you do that? My mother said, because my pan was never big enough. And if you kind of look at the world in general from the perspective of that simple tale, you can see that so much that we accept as conventional wisdom is merely existing for the want of the word why and the courage to say, well, I'm going to do it another way. If we don't start to do that, then we are the mouse in the tube, thinking we are free while going on doing as we're told. And that will have great consequences for our children, to say the least. Before I come into the nature of this global effort to control the world, I just want to talk briefly about where I'm coming from and what I term the knowledge that is being kept from us. Because there's loads of myths about me, crikey. I mean, I'm a myth maker extraordinaire, or people make them for me. But apparently, I think I'm the Messiah. Well, I wish I was, because it won't all save me ferry fares when I come from the Isle of Wight, you know. Could walk across the Solent. I've apparently discovered religion, which is really strange that I've written 6 books challenging the imposition of dogmatic religion and describing it as one of the greatest forms of mind control known to the human race. What I'm actually suggesting, and it's no more than what I believe and what increasing numbers of people believe, increasingly open-minded scientists too, challenges both the conventional views of who we are and what we're doing here. We're kind of offered the choice of believing that there is some judgmental God saying, you have sinned and you shall be punished. And that after one life on this planet, this guy judges whether we go to heaven or hell forever. The other alternative is that offered by conventional, this world is all there is science, which says that we are basically a cosmic accident of evolution, and we have no past, no future, and basically, as I saw on a t-shirt once, life's a bitch and then you die. Doesn't really seem like much of a choice to me. There is an alternative to both, which is increasingly emerging as the suppression is overcome, cast aside. I'll just briefly sum up what that alternative is. It's that everything in creation is the same energy in different states of being. Just as water, clouds, and ice are the same substance in different states of being, so everything that exists is the same energy in different states of being. And energy is also consciousness. Some more enlightened, open-minded scientists are now suggesting, and have been for some time, for instance, that it can be shown that water has a memory. Well, water as a memory seems to be crooked. That's crazy. It's water. How can it have a memory? But it can have a memory if energy is consciousness. Because therefore, everything has some kind of memory, some kind of retention of experience, whether it be a wall, water, the sky, ourselves, whatever. So if that is the case, then what we're looking at in this infinite creation is one gigantic mind. And it's this mind, this one consciousness that is everything expressing itself through different forms, that is the force that has become known as God, or whatever name you'd like to call it. Some people call it the infinite mind, it matters not. This God is not some guy with a beard sitting on a throne, handing out punishments for people who don't do as he says. And it's always a he, have you noticed that? It is the consciousness that is everything. And the way I see it, and increasing numbers of people see it, and indeed have done throughout human history, is that we are aspects of that whole. We, if you like, are like droplets of water in this ocean of consciousness. We're individual to a certain extent, but all together, we make up the whole. The question that comes back from that is, if we are eternal beings on the level of the mind, the consciousness, the thinking, feeling us, then where do we go when this life is over? If it's not, as science suggests, one life and then lights out. Has become accepted that when you're talking about life after death, you look up, don't you? I think, you know, heaven's at 30,000 feet or something. But in fact, creation's not kind of made up of chest of drawers levels like that. This one gigantic mind we call creation, God, or whatever name you'd like to choose, is broken up into frequencies, wavelengths, sharing the same space. Just as all the radio stations broadcasting to Liverpool here tonight are sharing the same space that we are all occupying, and they're all sharing the same space that they are occupying, even though we can't see them and they can't see each other, that is the very close and indeed the very same principle on which creation is broken up into wavelengths of life, wavelengths of consciousness, in other words. So when we see things like the great mystery of ghosts, this misty figure that we people see from time to time, from that perspective, it's no longer a great mystery. It is a entity, a consciousness on another wavelength. Just as if you get a radio and you tune it not quite on the station, but just off the station, you get principally the station you're closest to, but you're getting some interference from other stations. So in consciousness terms, visual terms, we are, when we see a ghost, tuning to a certain extent to another frequency, another wavelength, and we're seeing something of it. And the reason that it's not solid in the way it appears to us is because we're not actually right on the dial of that particular wavelength. We're only picking up the very outside of it. So the consciousness, the thinking, feeling, internal us, is, if you like, very similar to that radio dial. At any point in our evolution, we are tuned to one of creation's infinite number of wavelengths. At the moment, everyone on Earth is tuned to this, what you might call physical wavelength, physical vibration. Therefore, this is our reality. You know, we look around us, and this frequency, this physical frequency, is what we see. But psychic people can see something of other frequencies. Indeed, we're all psychic if we only realized it. And so, again, from this emerging perspective, this other great mystery called near-death experiences is no longer a mystery. Because what's happening in these millions and millions of similar stories that have emerged throughout the world over the past years or so, where people say, when they died, in our clinical terms, they were looking down on their physical body, and they say, it was my mind, it was my emotions, it was me looking down, but I wasn't part of my physical body anymore. And people say, oh, it's a great mystery that. All that's happening is the eternal part of us, the consciousness, the thinking, feeling, us, is withdrawing from the physical form. And that's all that happens on what we call death. And I was kind of interested a few months ago to turn on the news and see a story about near-death experiences. And what the news item was saying was that because resuscitation equipment in the crash areas of hospitals had improved so much in the last 10 to 20 years, more people were being revived from clinical death, and therefore more people were telling these near-death experience stories. So this has kind of intrigued the people involved so much that they'd launched this scientific study to see if they could find out more about what was going on. And one of the things that the news item said they were doing was to put symbols, funny symbols, on the top of the light shades in the crash areas. You get the idea? Only see from above, yeah? And it kind of occurred to me that we'll get final confirmation that consciousness can exist outside the physical body when someone comes back to life and says, hey, Doc, you want to see the funny symbol on the top of your light shade? But what kind of intrigued me most about this item was that the scientist at the end said, you know, we could be on the verge of the astonishing discovery that consciousness can exist outside the physical body. And that's astonishing because people have been saying that for thousands and thousands of years. This is not new knowledge we're talking about here. This is re-emerging knowledge, re-emerging understanding, after a vast period of suppression. Suppression that is part of control. If you want to control somebody and you want to get them to do what you want them to do, then if you can keep from their understanding the knowledge of who they are and what they're doing here and their infinite potential for love, for creativity, for contribution, that this is merely a short period of experience in our eternal evolution through experience, then you can very much more easily control people. If they have the choice of a judgmental God who will judge us on one life on earth, and of course we know what God wants you to do, then you can get people to do what you want them to do. And also, if you can get them to feel this sense of worthlessness of being nothing more than an accident with no worth and no past and no future, then again you can suppress the spirit and the true potential. So keeping from us who we are and the nature of life has been fundamental, and it's only now that it's beginning to reemerge. And even conventional, although it's very, very little time since it began to emerge, conventional science is being pressed now to address these explanations because the evidence that's coming to light more and more is making that impossible to ignore. I turned on the television again to hear the end of a series of lectures from the Royal Society a few months ago. And the scientist at the end was projecting forward where science was being led by evidence that was now coming to light. And he said, we seem to be being pushed into the area that suggests that all is the same energy. Something else that has been said for thousands of years.
Okay, that's about 20 minutes of David Icke from 1994, speaking in Liverpool. He's been saying the same thing for years, so credit to him for that. And he's spot on the money with the universal mind idea. That's exactly what's going on as far as I can see. And lots of variations of a theme, but one universal mind ultimately. And we're all part of it. So we're all participating in the process of the unfolding of universal mind, for want of a better phrase. The human society is a product of human consciousness and a reflection of human consciousness. So we get the society that we deserve ultimately. We can't. How can you complain about it? It just is what it is. If you want to change society, change your mind. Change your individual mind. And if we do that on a mass basis, then we change society. Anyway, that's enough rambling from me. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back a bit later with the radio show at 4 o'clock this afternoon on revolution.radio, Studio B. I may do a rehearsal at some point early in the afternoon, but I've got a potential guest lined up. Mitzi agreed to talk to me last week, so if she's awake, because she's in California, if she's up early enough, then we'll have an hour conversation, which is usually based around health with me and Mitzi. So there's plenty to get my teeth into about that. I've been on What Is Health for the last couple of weeks, so this will maybe be a continuation of that conversation. But thanks for listening, and I'll see you again later.